Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Add This to Your List, episode 89.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yep. We are 89.
Trekking closer and closer to 100.
Whoa, we are to the century
about
mark.
It.
Yes. Milestones, milestones.
Absolutely. I am Fumi Simano, joined by Mark J. Parker and Tom Chuba, who are
yes, indeedy.
Scattered across the United States.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like coronavirus now.
Oh, I know. Wow, good segue, Tom. It's now in New York. I just saw.
Oh my God, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
a woman has tested positive.
Oh God.
She had traveled to Iran 2 weeks ago. Iran has a really bad outbreak.
God.
And Rhode Island has it, so it's getting closer to Connecticut, too. The woman went to Italy on vacation 2 weeks ago. Italy is also having a really bad outbreak, and she tested positive last night in Rhode Island. So it's getting closer.
Oh my God. Every state soon. Major cities are happening, y'all. Well, we are going to break down, not the coronavirus, because we already did that.
Yeah.
If you want to listen
there,
to episode 88.
Yep.
Go back to what, check it out. So we're going to start off with our housekeeping and headlines, and we've got our lists. And then, unfortunately, I was unable to join. Sad face. I'm super, super emotional about it. However, Mark and Tom were able to talk to the documentarians of Scream Queen, My Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes.
Super excited about it. We can't wait for you guys to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be our show today. But let's get into some housekeeping first and foremost. And we've got Tom with some news for us. What's going on?
Yeah, so a while ago we had talked about how Disney was going to produce a Love, Simon sequel series that was going to be on the Disney Plus network.
Mm-hmm.
It was just announced, however, that this series entitled Love, Victor, they're moving it to Hulu. And while Disney hasn't come right out and said it, most people in the industry know. It's pretty clear to read between the lines and understand that probably because of the gay storyline, it just wasn't family friendly enough for Disney Plus. And because they own Hulu, it's going to their Hulu platform. I'm kind of super bummed about it. I mean, I get it's all under the same big Disney umbrella, right? What's it matter? As long as it sees the light of day, that's all that should matter. But I don't know. I think it would have been cool if they stuck to their grounds and just kept it on Disney Plus. And funny enough, now that the Love, Victor is making the move to Hulu, Hilary Duff is also making some noise about wanting the Lizzie McGuire reboot to make a move from Disney Plus to Hulu.
Yeah.
I'm guessing maybe she's hoping that they can be a little more darker or realistic.
Realistic, because Lizzie would be 30. Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We want to have Lizzie 30-year-old problems, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Sex,
yeah.
Love,
mm-hmm.
money, whatever. Things that Disney's probably a little skittish to talk about on Disney Plus. So anyway, I think that's an interesting development, and I'm a little disappointed, but it's still going to.
Why
Love
do
Victor
you want
and Hillary
it?
Are going to see the light of day. So
why do you want it on Disney Plus so bad?
Just to make a statement, I think.
Yeah. I know what you mean, Tom. I think ultimately it's a great thing because Hulu, as we know, really has no boundaries, and let's push it and let's cry and let's get excited and let's, like, you know, let these characters go through all the ups and downs of love and life. But I know what you mean, Tom. Like, there is something about the Disney Plus, like all the superheroes and all the epic Disney characters that you see associated with that brand. It would be so sick to see this great, cute gay kid, but I think ultimately, yeah, like you said, Tom, Disney has the majority stake in Hulu anyway. Like, they basically own both streamers that I think no matter what, we're going to be seeing those actors that, you know, play the characters in Love, Victor, like, all over the place. But I know what you mean. And
I think it's also a little personal to me because I know 1 million moms, which, by the way, doesn't have 1 million people. Like we talked about,
they're right.
probably cheering this as a win,
even
though they probably did nothing to get this move to happen. But it's kind of a win in their court. So that kind of stings a little bit.
Can I play devil's advocate?
Oh, okay.
Sure.
Would you rather have Love, Victor on Disney Plus in the absence of authentic storytelling of what the show really could be if it was on Hulu. Because, I mean, let's take away from, you know, the gay factor of the series. Disney Plus is very family friendly. They're very PG-13. Even, I mean, I don't even know if they're PG-13. They might just be PG.
They're just
very, like, you know, it's very, like, surface level. Mm-hmm. So is that what you would really want to see in terms of storytelling from that show on that platform?
Well, here's my thing. My understanding is that the series' first season is well into production.
Oh, yeah.
And they're nearly done. So I'm kind of like, whatever you're gonna see on Hulu, at least for the first season, you were probably going to see on Disney Plus anyway, because it's too late to go and make these massive changes to the scripts and to the episodes. So I'm not sure that it's going to be terribly authentic on Hulu because it's so far into production. See what I'm saying?
You're right, Tom. That is interesting because unless they were able to shoot a couple things that were going to be stripped away for Disney Plus anyway, yeah, the first season's probably going to feel pretty family friendly, which now is going to be a little annoying on Hulu, where it's like, well, why am I watching this on Hulu? So yeah, it's sort of
and
a
then
weird
season
limbo.
Two is going to feel so drastic if they go and make all these changes. But you know, we'll see. I'm here for the ride, but that's a great question, Fumi.
Yeah,
I don't know. I feel like there's a ton of stuff you can do in post. You can make a completely different show in post. So I don't know how much extra stuff they filmed, maybe anticipating that this change might happen. So who knows?
Good point.
Who knows?
Yeah.
We'll see.
Very interesting, though, that Hillary... It's funny because, like, I don't think Love, Victor, we don't know if they asked for this, right? They probably didn't. But Hillary is, like, begging to be moving to Hulu. Like, she is unhappy Instagramming about it. I know the showrunner.
And it's like, bitch, just be happy you got a show.
Yeah, well, here's my... And I'm going to play devil's advocate. I understand, yeah, be happy, but she already has a very successful show called Younger, where they can push it. And, of course, that's still... It's TV Land, so it's still pretty PG-13. But, like, that is real-world women's problems.
Absolutely,
and,
Mark.
Right? So she's probably like, why am I wasting my time? I'm already good. Like, I signed the dotted line because you told me this is what's happening. And then all of a sudden, two episodes in, they fire the showrunner.
Totally.
And make it and have this meeting and say it's going to be much more family friendly. It's like, well, shit, I didn't agree to that. So I get it. That's weird. But it's just, it's kind of cool and really interesting for her to be so vocal about it. Like, she is not holding back. So
this is
interesting to see what happens.
And then I have some housekeeping. I had on my list last week, Love is Blind. It was an ad. And if you haven't added this to your list, what are you doing? it is freaking everywhere. It is a phenomenon. Everybody's
talking about
it.
Oh, yeah.
It is the best shit to happen since sliced bread, y'all. Like, I am all about Lauren and Cameron. The finale aired. If you haven't watched it, get into it.
Oh, the finale already aired?
It came out last Thursday.
Oh, damn. Okay, I'm very behind.
And I went to Atlanta for work this weekend, and I really, really hate, like, having to, like, be up on flights. Like, I prefer to sleep, so I try to make myself stay up as long as possible. So I watched the finale when it hit at, like, 12:01 to, like, kill 2 hours so I could, like,
really
tired.
Hours?
Yeah, well, it's five couples. We're going to see married, right? So it was trying to kill some time so that I could be really tired from my flight. And I watched the finale, and it was so good, y'all. It was so good. But Netflix has announced that they, due to popular demand, they are going to be doing a reunion special on March 5th.
I love a good reunion special.
Right? Mm-hmm. I, to be clear, I'm not sure if this is going to be airing on the Netflix app or Netflix YouTube page. I've seen kind of like some sort of both happening. I'm not exactly sure where.
That's interesting.
But check it out. Both places, March 5th, reunion special to find out what happens to your couples, where they've been at. Because they got married, or the weddings were filmed a year and a half ago. The weddings were filmed in November 15th, 2018. So these people have either been separated, together, whatever, for about a year and a half.
Oh,
so it's a lot to, like, catch up on.
Wow.
So,
that's fascinating that Netflix shot it that long ago.
Yes.
you know, they move they move faster than regular
they
TV.
They do.
So, whoa. Okay, that'll
have
be
you guys watched any episodes?
I haven't yet.
No.
I am, though, because everyone I'm talking to is like, oh my god, The Love is Blind. I'm like, oh, my friend Fumi, my co-host, raved about that on our show.
Yeah.
So, I feel like you started a little revolution here with the obsession of Love is Blind. So
I went to brunch with a bunch of friends today, and we literally spent a good 20, 30 minutes talking about this show.
Ooh.
So watch it, people.
Okay.
Watch it.
Love
boom, it. Boom, boom, boom. That's it for housekeeping. Let's get into some headlines. And Mark, what do you have?
Oh, sure. Thank you. So as we all have heard by now, it was massive news a few days ago. The internet fucking went crazy. The Friends reunion, everyone. The Friends reunion special. It's not an episode. It's not scripted, which I am like, well, what's the fucking point?
But what's the point?
Right?
They've done this already.
Agreed.
Right. Yeah, but so this will be the first time in years that all six main cast members will be on a couch together talking about the show, and this will be for HBO Max. So HBO Max, which I still honestly don't totally understand. I'm like, is it HBO?
Yeah.
Is it? What is it? But anyway, they are coming out the gate once they unveil their slate later this year, in just a few months, I think, with this Friends special. And guys, I read. So that's cool. Of course, that's exciting. I get it. Everyone's, you know, it's going to be it's gonna be fun. Like, we've already established, the three of us aren't diehards, but it'll be very nice to watch it. I mean, we'll see if
I don't even think I will watch it.
Oh, okay.
You won't really?
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I could care. I couldn't care less.
Oh, okay. I'll still watch it because I mean, I like the six of them, and
so
I like seeing them on Instagram.
More.
Like, I'll hang out. But, okay. Well, Tom might not care less, but everyone else does. But this was the most interesting thing I have read about it, which is that so HBO Max, which is a brand new thing, we don't even know if it's going to be a hit or not, right? It most likely is. But each cast member, apparently, for this like 1 hour ish reunion special, is making $2.5 million each, at least it said. That's from an insider. At the very starting minimum, $2.5 million each.
And they negotiated together, much like they negotiated their $1 million contract together when they were on Friends. I don't know why people who are on ensemble shows don't do this.
I know.
Why don't they do this?
It's actually kind of endearing.
Oh, yeah. It's really awesome
yeah.
that they're, like, such a team. And you're right, Foom. It's interesting because they made headlines years ago for that final season, $1 million per episode, and now they're making headlines. This is definitely, it's got to be a new thing for just a reunion
special. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that's easily, like, that's, like, $15 million just on the cast for the reunion special. So,
yeah,
this is wild. So we'll see how it turns out. But, like, you know, like we kind of hinted at just a few minutes ago, I kind of wish it was, like, a actually scripted little, like, episode.
I'm disappointed it's not, to be honest.
I want to see the
characters.
I don't
really care about seeing them sit around and reminiscing about the show.
Right, I agree. It's like, I already see you guys online. Like, I get that you're friends in real life. I want to see the characters.
Yeah, they hang out together all the time. It's
right.
Like, okay, yawn. Show me something new.
Yeah, so, you know, that's the news. And then just to piggyback off that, our girl Courtney Cox is not only doing that, she just got booked. She will be starring in a new horror comedy series for Starz. So I don't know what this means for Scream 5, but she's coming back to TV, and which is great because, I mean, she's just great. I still love her, and she does comedy well. So this will be a fun little Starz show called Shining Vale, where she plays the mom of a dysfunctional family that moves to a small town from the city into a house that is haunted, but no one seems to realize it except for Pat, the mom, played by Courtney Cox. So I guess there's possession and there's all these things that only she is seeing, and I guess her family's kind of thinking she's a little crazy. So, and it's actually co-created by, I didn't realize, by Sharon Horgan, who you might not know her name, but you definitely know her face. She's most famous for being on that show Catastrophe. She was in Game Night.
Oh, okay.
She's really funny. So this seems like a good project. So we'll see how that goes.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Tom, what do you got?
Macaulay Culkin is making his comeback. Mm-hmm. And how's he doing it? He is going to be in season 10 of American Horror Story. I thought that was super interesting.
Yes.
I don't know. There's not much out there on what the role is going to be or how big of a role it's going to be. It looks like he's going to be a regular on the season.
Mm-hmm.
But just when I was about to give up, it's like, damn you, Ryan Murphy. I got to at least check out the pilot.
Yeah.
Just to see if
remind
he's
me
weird
again
or not.
If we know the topic of season 10?
We
do
don't
we know
yet.
What that is?
I don't
okay.
think we know
nope.
it yet. We
okay.
know it's Macaulay and then a lot of returning faces. Sarah Paulson.
Sarah and Evan.
They're back. Yep, thank God. They're like really the only reason to watch now. Lily Rabe is back, who's been on a bunch. I think Kathy Bates. So some faces that were not in the abysmal last season are back. So we'll see. But yeah, that's super interesting because he still acts here and there, but not like this in a full regular role. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I have some big news, business news, coming out of Disney. The premier CEO, like, big name Bob Iger, stepped down as being Disney CEO this week.
Shocking, I thought.
It was shocking announcement. We knew that he had interest in stepping down prior to the acquisition of Fox, but then they acquired Fox, and so we had to see that transition going. And I think a lot of people thought that he was at least going to stay on for maybe a couple years after that to kind of just make sure everything had settled and, like, the dust was away. But no, they just came out and said it and immediately announced the new replacement.
Yes.
Yep.
And I don't know about you guys, but I was, like, very surprised.
I was very surprised.
Like,
I know he wants to do other things. That, yeah, like you said, Foom, exactly. Like, that makes sense. And a lot of Disney higher-ups in those high positions do end up moving on to do more creative things. But, like, this is, like, a prime time for Disney. Like, I'm just surprised. Like, Disney Plus just got started. Yeah, it's kind of weird. Do you think there's, like, another...
Guys, when you make the money that he makes, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right, and I totally understand. And he's staying on as chairman to make sure that the transition continues smoothly, so he'll still be collecting his paycheck. But there have been rumors for quite a while that he has political ambitions.
Yeah.
And it's something that he's been interested in possibly running for president. So I don't know if this is his first kind of step into, you know... making sure that happens. The person who's going to be taking over as chief executive officer is Bob Chapek, who I think I'm saying his last name right, who basically ran Disney resorts and, like, theme parks. Maybe it was just theme parks. I don't know if it was resorts. I apologize if I got that wrong. But who basically ran Disney's theme parks. And so this is the new guy who's coming in. So I don't know. I mean,
and that is
I don't
so...
know if he's got the Bob Iger touch. I don't know.
I know.
But... yeah, I mean, the theme parks are such a small piece. I mean, you think of Disney as the theme parks, but when you look at Disney's portfolio, it's only one aspect of a very large portfolio.
So. Yeah.
It is really interesting. And that just kind of keeps hinting back at my own thought that, like, yeah, Disney doesn't really care about, like, old school TV. It's, like, streaming, it's massive movies, and it's theme parks and events, and, like, so it's interesting to bring in someone from the events kind of side of things into now the whole thing. Like, they just want to keep building and dominating, so this will be really interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's it for housekeeping and headlines.
Yeah. All right. Well, lots of things to talk about, y'all. But now it is time for, you know what it is, the list.
The list.
Okay, everyone. So it is your favorite time of the week. It is the time that Fumi, Tom, and I share what is on our list of things to watch. We have movies, we have TV, we even have videos that we like to talk about, what's out there streaming. So let's get into it. I know there's been a lot of drama and things to watch on the news with all these political debates, but we are going to keep it, you know, in the fictional fun realm of things. Let's go with Tom. Why don't you tell us first what's on your list?
Sure. I've only got one thing on my list this week because it's been busy, 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 busy. Mm-hmm. But that one thing is the new Guy Ritchie film, The Gentlemen.
Oh.
Mm. Mm-hmm. It stars Matthew McConaughey, Charlie Hunnam, Colin Farrell, Michelle Dockery, Henry Golden. There's a whole bunch of people in it. Mm. Oh, Hugh Grant. I should not forget him. He's a very big part of the film. So it's this ensemble cast, and basically the premise is... Matthew McConaughey plays an American who's been living in England for quite some time, and he's basically dominated the underground marijuana trade in England, right? And growing marijuana is really interesting over there because In England, it's a much smaller country than the U.S., and much of their land is considered public land, where here in the States, a lot of land is privately owned. So the marijuana trade is just very different from what you see here in the States. But basically, he's built himself up to be the king of, you know, the underground marijuana trade. And he's married to Michelle Dockery, who's this power woman. She's like a CEO of a car manufacturing plant in England as well. And basically, he's at a point where his business has built up so much that he's ready to sell it. And a couple people come into play wanting to buy the business, but they do some shady shit to kind of undermine the value of the business so that they could purchase it for cheaper. And basically, it's about him, McConaughey, and his right-hand man, Charlie Hunnam, getting on to what people are doing and trying to stop it. So it is directed by Guy Ritchie. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I'm not really a Guy Ritchie fan, but I'm going to say that this movie is an add to your list. I really liked it.
Really?
I did, yeah. I thought it was clever. It was really well directed. The fashion was really cool. They're all dressed to the nines, right? The costume designer was like spot on. The set production was pretty cool. It's the kind of movie, like many Guy Ritchie films are, you do have to pay attention because everything comes at you rapid fire, and it's one of those films where if you're not paying attention for, you know, 30 seconds, you're checking your phone or you go to take a bathroom break, you come back, you are at risk of kind of being lost because it is such an intricately woven story that you do have to pay attention. But I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it. I did. I thought Hugh Grant plays a villain, and he's been doing that a little more often lately, and he's very good at it. I think it's a very different career choice for him because he's not the rom-com, you know, love interest anymore, and he knows that as he's aging now. So he's kind of taking a risk and doing new roles. But McConaughey was good. He was sexy. Michelle Dockery continues to impress me. She's a really strong actress.
Yeah,
I don't know,
she's
guys.
Great.
I thought it was interesting. I did, and I think you guys might like it. But it's definitely not a movie you have to see in theaters.
Okay.
Wait for it to come on demand or HBO or Showtime, something that you could catch it free. But yeah, I dug it.
Cool. That's fun.
The gentleman.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a surprise. I thought you were maybe going to say, you know, it's not so good.
Okay,
but
to miss. Yeah, I thought so too.
Right.
I'll wait till it comes out on HBO.
Yeah. That's great. Okay, cool. So that's Tom's choice. Foom, what is on your list?
So I kind of have one and a half kind of on my list. The first one is Gentified. I hope I'm saying that right. Obviously, it's a playoff of Gentrified, and it's this new Netflix series from America Ferrera about a Mexican-American family who is basically living in a gentrifying L.A. neighborhood, and they have this taco stand that has, like, all this amazing, authentic Mexican food, but they are a family that is struggling. It's a father, a son, a cousin. They all work at this taco place, but they can, like, not afford to pay their rent. Like, it is dire. And they've got rich family who kind of have, they have like a rich cousin who like is a cordon bleu or wants to be a cordon bleu chef and has aspirations of really like going above and beyond like the circumstances of his environment. But he's getting pulled and like you're, you know, wanting to be a gringo or you want to like abandon like your, you know, the type of place that in your family that you had, and so he's kind of like fighting that battle. I would say that it's a dramedy. I think it's more heavily on the comedy side, but there are definitely elements of drama in there. I'm going to say it's an ad. It's 30 minutes each episode. I believe it's 10 episodes. I didn't really get a chance to look at the last one, so it might be 8, but I feel like it's 10. And it was good. I watched the first episode on the plane. I really enjoyed it. I think the characters are really colorful. They've got a cousin who's this beautiful girl. She's a lesbian. She's got a black girlfriend. But I can't tell if she's black or she's Dominican. Like, I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
Necessarily what kind of her background is. Like I said, we've got the dad who owns the taco stand. And forgive me, I do not know their names. I did not pay that much attention to the show.
God. Oh boy.
I will learn them eventually. So Anna is the artist and she's the one who's got the black lesbian, but I feel like she might be Dominican. We've got Chris is the guy who I was talking about, who was the chef who just got back from Paris, but, like, wants to go back and, like, really get, like, his next elevation in, like, the Paris cuisine because he has aspirations of, like, opening his own restaurant. Like I said, America Ferrera is one of the executive producers of this series. And it's a really good show. I laughed. I can tell that as the series goes on, it'll probably pull at the heartstrings and get, you know, emotional and sad. But I loved it. I thought it was a great show and a great series. And I'm excited to see what else comes out. And it's not one of those series that Netflix is doing where they're just releasing in a weekly format. I do believe that is all bingeable. Episodes are out now. So I do plan when I have time to kind of sit down and plunker down and probably just knock them out. Cause like I said, the 30 minutes.
Right.
So it's not going to be like a all day kind of thing.
Yeah. Nice. And is America in it or she's strictly producing from what you've seen?
That's a good question. I don't know. As far as the first episode, she's not in it.
Okay.
And I know, doesn't she do Superstore on NBC?
Yeah. But she's leaving.
Yeah. I don't know if she is going to be in any of the episodes or maybe because her schedule.
Right.
She wasn't able to, but I'm going to be looking out for her to kind of see if she pops her head in for sure.
Cool.
The next kind of half thing on my list, I feel like I need to mention just because I've had it on every other season before, is Narcos Mexico. I've talked about Narcos. I've talked about the second iteration of that, which is Narcos Mexico. This is the second season of Narcos Mexico. And basically the series follows the drug trade starting from like Colombia. Now we're in Mexico and it is an ad. Like, I love this series. It is so fascinating to me.
Really? Even all these seasons in?
Yeah. It can just keep going. Because let's be honest,
I was
going to
say, how long do you think it can go?
The drug trade is still happening, okay? Mm-hmm. It is still going on. And I love the fact that you can, like, look at this and, like, take these real-world situations that they work with and then, like, research it yourself and see, like, the real seasons. Like, I'm pretty sure the next season will be about El Chapo. I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I forget. Is each season of Narcos Mexico a different story?
Yes. So the first, like, series followed Pablo Escobar.
Right. Okay.
And then it followed, like, the Colombians. There were, like, three brothers who had this serious drug trade after Pablo Escobar died. They were ruthless and insane. And then last season followed the American, right when the DEA was first formulated and the first American DEA agent that was killed by drug traffickers. And that set off the tone for season two.
Cool.
So it's so good. But I will say this, you guys, I have to admit, I don't love season two as much as I loved the previous seasoned.
Okay.
I'm still going to say it's an ad, but I have to admit I've had a hard time following what is going on and what is happening. I know that there are DEA agents that are in Mexico that are basically trying to avenge the death of Kiki Camarena, who is a DEA agent that was murdered in the murdered by a drug trafficker. But other than that, I'm, like, having a hard time, like, following all of the other supporting characters. And so I don't know what it is about the second season that is just not gravitating to me like the previous ones have.
It might just – you've only seen the first episode of the new season?
No, I'm pretty far in. I think I'm on episode 8. Okay. And I really, really thought, like, do I need to go back and rewatch this entire thing?
My God. Oh, shit. You're lost, girl.
Because I'm like, what is happening?
Oh, my God. So maybe
this isn't
an ad.
And I really like the show, so I'm not, like, I don't get really distracted. Like, I am watching, but I just feel like maybe because part of me is like, I can't get my head out of, like, the way that the FBI, CIA, DEA operates in a current state. That watching them first formulate, like, torture techniques and watching them formulate like what their agency is. Like, I can't get my mind out of that, so things that they're doing don't make sense to me.
Okay.
Even though literally the narrator is explaining to me that, like, we just, now we know how torture works, but back then we didn't. Even though, like, he definitely says that.
Yeah.
I just, in my brain, I'm like, what is going on? Huh. But I still love Diego Luna, so I'm gonna.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna stick with that.
Okay, good. All right, that's an interesting take.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's definitely an ad, but if you can watch it and explain to me what's happening, leave that in the comments, y'all.
Fumi needs some Narcos guidance. So that is so funny. Awesome. Okay, well, I will wrap up our list. I have two items, kind of one and a half as well. I'll be like Fum. So my first item, guys, Queen Gaga is back, and we have a nice dance anthem for the spring, baby. So she is back with Stupid Love, her new song. The song aside, it's great, but I want to focus on the video, the music video, which we don't talk much about on this show. I wanted to talk about it because not only is it cool and funky and beautiful, but it was shot on the iPhone 11 Pro.
Interesting.
Shot on the iPhone, and it's part of the whole, you know, Apple's whole campaign of shot on iPhone. Apparently, Selena Gomez's most recent video a couple months ago was also shot on iPhone, but this, I think just because it's Gaga, it just has more, you know, it's in the news more for being shot on iPhone. And for those of you out there who remember that great indie film Tangerine about the transgender women kind of walking around LA a few years ago, directed by Sean Baker, who did the Florida Project, that film used this app, which I need to download, Filmic Pro. And so Filmic Pro, back then it was only a couple dollars, now it's like 15 or so. But so the filmmakers of Gaga's Stupid Love video used the Filmic Pro app on the iPhone, and it looks stunning. Have you guys had a chance to watch it at all?
Yep. Yeah, it's a fun video. The choreography is a lot of fun.
Yeah, the choreography is great. It's nice to see Gaga back dancing because it's been over 3 years since her last album. And as we know, with Joanne, it wasn't super dancey.
Yeah, it was folksy. Yeah.
The video is definitely weird. It kind of makes me think of like Power Rangers. Like, you know, I'm all for Gaga.
Yeah.
All for her getting funky, but like, it's kind of a little like, is this like a weird kids show from another country and she's like got things on her face and what's going on? But yeah, I thought that was just really cool to you know, make this huge video on a phone that many people have, you know. And yeah, so I'm excited for what will come next from Gaga, but I'm loving the video, and I'm already practicing all the dance moves, so there you go. And then my next item is the brand new Netflix show. It just came out last Friday, just like Gaga's video did. It came out last Friday. A new Netflix show called I Am Not Okay With This. Have you guys heard at all about this show?
I've
heard of it, yeah.
Yes. Okay, so this is a fun, it's a very short show. It's some episodes are literally only 20 minutes, so it is nice and fast, baby.
Love that.
It's only 7 episodes, so if I had more free time and didn't work basically 6 days a week, I could have basically finished it by now. You think I'm joking. You all think I'm joking. But so, I Am Not Okay With This. It stars...
He's not.
Tom knows. I Am Not Okay With This stars two of the It kids. It stars Sophia Lillis, a cute redhead. It's funny because she was so good in Sharp Objects on HBO. I know we talked about that. I love it. But now all I see is like a young Amy Adams in her. It's crazy how much they look alike. It's crazy. But she's great. She's the lead. She plays Sydney, a 17-year-old who starts to realize she has telekinetic powers. It's basically, guys, a comedic, you know, dramedy version of Carrie. So I really am curious.
Oh, funny.
Oh, yeah. It's totally like a funny, awkward, modern Carrie. And it's interesting because I really do feel like Stephen King needs to get like a credit on this show because it's, I have only seen the first two episodes, but the start of every episode and one of the posters for the show is the main character doused in blood, like walking the streets. So it does.
That's funny.
It does feel, you know, I don't know if that's just kind of to connect to Carrie or if there's really going to be something happening. But even in the start of episode two, she's running from a cop car covered in blood outside at night. So it's like, But so it stars Sophia Lillis, and it also stars cute little Wyatt Olef, who was in It as well. I forget the character's name that he played, but I didn't think he was, you know, he's kind of like nerdy and whatever, but he's actually becoming quite charming. He's very charming on this show. He plays Stanley. He also played Stanley. So there you go. So he's Stanley again. But so they're kind of like they're sort of in a budding relationship. They're two very weird 17-year-old high schoolers, you know, stoners. And Sophia's character, Sydney, just basically finds herself in a weird spot in life. Her dad died a year previously, so it's her and her mom and her little brother. And she's got some anger issues, and she's just feeling uncomfortable, and she doesn't like that her best friend, her best girlfriend, is now dating, like, a really douchey jock. And mm-hmm. so she starts to realize that things are getting weird when she's with the two of them and something happens to the jock. And she also narrates the show, which really, I think, is where the gold is in this show. Her narration is great. And so once something happens, you hear her say, "Wait, what?" In her mind. And so then she starts to realize, okay, I'm, like, doing things that are not normal. So it's cool. I definitely want to keep up with it. Add it to your list. Like I said, it's 7 episodes. They range from 20 to 30 minutes, so it's an easy watch. And yep. I'm genuinely curious to see how it will go and how it will compare to the famous story of Carrie that we all know. So we'll see.
Cool.
Yeah, I recommend
it. Sounds like
it.
Fun.
Yeah, definitely. And it's produced by same people from Stranger Things and also from a show I haven't seen yet, The End of the Fucking World on Netflix. I haven't seen that yet, but that looks fun as well and kind of darkly funny. So yeah, check it out. So that is our list for episode 89, everybody. Just to recap and add it up, it looks like we had all ads. Tom gave us The Gentleman, which is still out in theaters now, I believe, by Guy Ritchie. And then Fumi gave us two Netflix shows, Gentified from producer America Ferreira and Narcos Mexico. Narcos is an ad, but Fumi just needs some help. So, you know, help her out, everyone. And then I gave you, also on Netflix, I Am Not Okay With This, and Gaga's brand spanking new music video for Stupid Love. Check it out if you have not. Mm-hmm. All right. And with that, that's the list. So now let's get into a segment I am super excited for. Tom, tell us what's going on.
Cool. Okay, listeners. Well, we are joined by the directors and the star of the new documentary, fresh, hot off the press, Scream Queen, My Nightmare on Elm Street. And we're joined by the directors Roman Kimyente and Tyler Jensen, and the subject of the documentary, Mark Patton. So, guys, instead of us, our listeners hear our voices all the time. Why doesn't one of you give a brief synopsis about what this documentary entails?
Roman. Okay. What does it entail? So this is a very intimate look into the story of A Nightmare on Elm Street 2. But more importantly, Mark Patton and what happened before, during, and after that experience.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. So in case listeners don't know, the sequel to A Nightmare on Elm Street was a little controversial because it was considered super homoerotic. And back in the early 1980s, that was a surprise to a lot of people and, you know, a little controversial. So guys, tell us, this is a really interesting and unique story to tell. How did the idea come to fruition, and how did the three of you join forces?
Well, I'll start. It was, for me, I basically just, I think we all came together at the right time. I think all of us, there was a fire burning, and I found Mark, who had already been blossoming this. I mean, Mark, you were developing this for quite a while, but when we got together, it was something very different.
Oh yeah, Well, I had started with the idea of doing something, and I really wasn't sure what I was going to do. And my original idea was to focus on a number of different boys who I knew who had disappeared during the 80s because of the homosexuality, AIDS, what some sort of backlash in Hollywood. And then Roman came on originally through music, really. And then Mr. Tyler showed up and with his camera in hand down in Florida. And then just like it was sort of magic. This was, you know, the team that was supposed to make this. And I really believe, I've said this a number of times, but I really believe that that it couldn't have been made without any one of us. I mean, we each had something special to bring to the table. And I think we succeeded greatly in what our intention was. And so I'm super, super proud of the movie. I think it's a very difficult needle to thread. And I think the boys did a really, really good job with it. So, yeah, so super happy.
Tyler?
Absolutely. I think for Roman and I specifically, we both really wanted to be a part of this project because we both needed it in the sense that we're huge horror fans. And if anyone was going to make this movie, we knew that we needed to be a part of it.
That's awesome. Nice. And next question for you guys would be, so this is really for Mark, but feel free all of you to chime in. So Mark, you are basically, which is really cool, I watched the movie long ago when I was a kid, I rewatched it. I actually enjoy the sequel. I know, you know, whatever, people can think what they think.
I do too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think actually, you know, the sequel is, it's, you know, there was a whole audience that was really fond of it and liked the movie. They just didn't really feel like they could be very vocal at the time, I think. What it is, but so the question, I'm so sorry.
Sure, no, I love it. Yeah, you're so right. But so Mark, so you are basically the first and one of the maybe a very few male scream queens in cinema, which is, I think, really awesome now. I think we can all agree that's awesome. But my question is, back in 1985 when the film came out, what was that a title of a male scream queen? Was that a title that you wish you weren't given at the time? Was that an embarrassing thing to have? What was your kind of reaction at the time to all of a sudden all this attention like that?
Well, thanks. It was like a dual track, because I will say, financially and critically, actually, Nightmare on Elm Street 2 was very successful at the time. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really till a short time after that that the questioning of my sexuality and, you know, the sort of discovery of the way that David had written the became, and then a part of it was very devastating. I mean, it really, really was devastating, and I was very angry at the time, and I didn't have any power to address what, through the circumstances of how the film was made. Like, I was the star of the movie, and I was given a press package and all of these kind of things, and then when they decided that Robert was going to be the star of the movie, because they switched mid thing, they pulled all my press ops away from me and they gave them to him.
Wow.
I could have had an opportunity to sort of explain myself and, you know, present myself to the public, but they like just dismissed me. And so that all adds into it. It's interesting that we're talking to you today because, you know, we've been on the road for a year we've seen this in really almost 100 theaters, I would guess, something in the high 50s and 60s.
Wow.
And we've seen it with all kinds of people, in rural situations, and then in Outfest, the Castro. Yeah, I love where we're sitting now. You know, the view from here is pretty spectacular. So, and back then, I just wanted to be an actor, you know, and I any hint or whiff of homosexuality, they coded it and they told you were too light or you were too, you know, light in the loafers, something really derogatory. And that was meant that you wouldn't be going back to that casting director anymore, or you wouldn't be working with that director ever again. And there were certain places where, you know, which were very popular then, that you just definitely would not work. You know, there's certain production houses where, and they were doing a lot of stuff. It's like, you knew you would never be on LA Law, for example, or you wouldn't be on Hill Street Blues because they just didn't accept our kind of people. So it's devastating, but it was, but I lived through it and I'm here. And I really feel like I did all of that stuff back then so that we could have this platform to talk. And we get to say a lot of what I personally want to say. So I'm thrilled. It's cool.
That is cool. Yeah. And now, Mark, now that you have this great attention and this and your story's being told, do you think this will interest you in getting back into acting, or is that kind of done? Because I know you took a long break from in the spotlight.
Well, I did. And, you know, it's like we always say when we're doing this, like there are no claw marks on the end of my career. I mean, I just stopped.
Yeah.
And I have been making movies, actually, for the last couple of years, like sort of testing the water. I have a new movie coming out called One Dead Dog, which I really love. And it was filmed in Portland. And, You know, I played a grown up, which was really, really cool because I had never played an adult. I'd only played, you know, children. And I somehow had it in my mind, if you weren't like the adolescent star of a movie, then it wasn't worth doing. And this last movie really proved to me that that there's a lot of fun to be had right up until the day you like step into the grave, I think. But yeah. I have different agendas with this, and I have different feelings. Like, I just got offered a movie this afternoon, and, ooh, you know, I really...
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, thanks. And, you know, I'm not going to take it, but... but, I mean, that's been a sort of constant with me, and boys who are, like, Roman's age and Tyler's age, who grew up in horror and all that kind of stuff, those are full-blown directors now, and many of them, you know, want to work with me. So,
yeah,
just, you know, so, like, if the opportunity is good and the script is good, I'll say yes. And if I have no interest in it, I'll just say no.
Yeah.
And but I like speaking, and I like the social activism part of this a lot. I do like having a platform so that I can talk about things that I think are important to talk about. And I can articulate them in such a way that people understand them. And I like doing that with an audience. So that you like naming things is really important to me. And you know, calling out things for exactly what they are. Usually I would be real polite boy and I just say, oh, whatever. And I don't do that anymore. I mean, I literally say, if it smells fishy to me, I'm going to let you know that I smell the fish and what I think about it. And you can, you know, you can go ahead and have your opinion, whatever you want, but I'm just not going to melt away because you think I'm a faggot. So there's power in these three boys sitting here. We did a pretty spectacular thing. And so whatever they offer me, I'll take. And if money's attached to it, I'll definitely take it. Because we spent a boatload.
If the price is right.
Yeah. These boys worked very hard. And, you know, this is basic. We had a nice Indiegogo for like $60,000 or whatever. But this movie really is self-funded.
Yeah.
And it's made by the grace of, you know, people who gave us things and in kind. And that we worked our asses off and we couldn't work other jobs. So, you know. Show us the money. It's nice that the money is not coming this way instead of going that way. That's a really good thing.
Yeah.
Amen. Yeah. Love that. And that's a good way to move on to the next question. This, we can have Roman and Tyler, if you want to lead this one. Since this was such a labor of love, a lot of hard work, I'm sure years of hard work that you guys did. What's really cool, as you can see in the trailer, for anyone out there who hasn't seen the film yet, that you guys were able to assemble the cast and crew of the, you know, 1985 film, Robert Englund, Kim Myers, even, you know, the director, writer, everyone. What was that like getting everyone back in? And was that a lot of hard scheduling, coordinating? Tell us about that.
Oh, yes. It was extremely difficult. No, we didn't. We are crafty. And we decided that if we're going to do this, we're going to use opportunities as they present themselves. So we just happened to have, well, Mark actually was part of a big Florida festival that was the reunion of Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
Cool.
We were celebrating with the 30th anniversary of the movie. And they were all invited, and we thought, let's use this opportunity to go and talk to everybody. And it was on the spot. I like to explain that none of these people were prepped for this. So it's not like they had time to give you their best camera answers. We sat them down. They were all assuming to talk about, what was it like to work with Freddy Krueger? And instead we said, what was it like AIDS in the 1980s? And then they're like, whoa, okay. So,
it was an ambush for sure.
Wow.
Well, you know, there are the Elm Street people from our particular film are all, you know, sort of highly intelligent, articulate people. Well, with the exception of Jack, God bless him. no, not really. He's articulate too. We had to knock through his mansplaining bullshit.
Ah.
Oh, I'm so sorry about that.
No, curse.
Go for it.
Okay. Well, I like to curse. So, but you know, I want to let Tyler speak, but I want to say that, you know, we were met with serendipity all the way along. Like, again, I was paying for hotel rooms and stuff down there, and my friend Bill was paying for some, and we had to rent things and rent cameras, and they had to, you know, and it's like, and the convention was an absolute bust. I mean, there was nobody there. It was like the Sons of Anarchy, John Waters, us, but no customers. So we made no money, but we had unlimited filming time with Robert Englund, which had the convention been really
golden,
we would have gotten 10 minutes. Wow. And Robert's kind of like me, so he likes to talk a lot. So he just sat there and talked for hours and hours and hours and hours. And so that was a gold mine for us. I mean, it was a short-term loss financially, but it was a long-term gain for us. And our whole, I think our whole filming experience has really been that. Like, what might look like lemons turned out to be just, you know, a pot of gold. What do you think, Tyler?
Right, definitely. That Florida convention was my first time on the set with everyone. I had just met Roman probably a month before working a freelance job where he was talking about going down here to film this. And I took that opportunity. I'm like, I don't know what you're doing. All I hear is Nightmare on Elm Street 2. I'm involved. I'm coming with you. You can't get rid of me. And it was my first time at a horror convention. I had never seen any of these people, especially I've never seen them interact with other fans like myself. And after following Mark for 2-3 days and then going back to the hotel room with him and hearing his personal life story, everything kind of clicked in my head that this wasn't just a documentary about Nightmare on Elm Street 2, about the gayest horror movie ever made. It was suddenly about something so much more that I, as a young gay man, had never even heard of. Just the struggles, the homophobia in Hollywood, and how important this story was to share with other people. And I find that it was very emotional in that moment. I was like, I know exactly what this movie needs to be, and I'm so thankful to be here to help put it together.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome.
There's a line in the movie which I like find really, it's a linchpin line, and it happens a couple of times. And when Jack, you know, sort of comes at me and says, you know, well, this is not all about you. And, you know, and at the time I was kind of like, well, you know, how could it not be all about me? I mean, I'm on the screen. Mm-hmm. It's me. I mean, it's pretty much me front and center, you know, and I'm the one they're talking about. But as I'm coming down the escalator, and then I say it once again in the end of the film, is like, but this is about me. And it's about people like me. And that's who we were speaking for. We're never speaking for anybody but the people like us. Mm-hmm. You know, this movie was made very specific, for my point of view, was made very specifically for boys just like me. Mm. And that's all I cared about. And it really, on a certain level, it's still all I care about. I care about boys who are like 13 to 30 who are struggling with, you know, like that, some of the hate that rolls around in the world. And it's better now. It's just different. And, but that's my contention. I'm not really interested. I don't want to convert anybody. And I'm not really preaching to the crowd either. I want those boys to know that, like, that they're not alone. Like when I say, you know, it's only a matter of, you know, all my problems are just a matter of geography. And sometimes it's just as simple as that. It's if you can just get away from the toxicity and go to someplace that's safe, then your life changes and blossoms. So
yeah, but not everybody has the resources for that. So finding films out there like this, and so that they can hear the message that there are other people out there like them that can sometimes save a life even.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's nice to be like sort of a lily pad, you know, that people can hop on. All the frogs can hop on us, and then we turn them into princes or princesses. So, you know, it's
pretty rare. That was the beautiful thing about this movie. It kind of evolved from, you know, an exploration about this horror sequel into an underlying story of like queer mentorship, especially in Mark's story. A lot of the things that he went through were kind of universal, especially across our generation between Roman and myself, of, you know, growing up in small towns and making the pilgrimage away to New York City or San Francisco, where we could be ourselves. And that was something that I personally connected to with on Mark's story, and I'm very grateful to share it with other people as well.
So speaking of Robert, I know one of you mentioned Robert. Do you think he would come back to a Nightmare sequel? And what do you think a Nightmare sequel in 2020 would look like?
Well, Mark has a really good idea. I'll let him explain that. I heard a very similar theory from another friend who's involved in the movie, Nathan Thomas Milliner. And they both kind of have a very interesting take on what could be done. As far as Robert Englund coming back, probably not as Freddy Krueger, but I'm sure if you pulled him in to do like some other role, some feature thing or whatever, sure, but that role, those character roles, they're a lot. They are a lot. Imagine just being natural under all that unnaturalness, you know? It's a lot.
Right. That's a fantastic way to put it, yeah.
Did anybody see the new trailer for Candyman this week?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it looks fantastic.
Do not see the parallels to Freddy's Revenge.
I totally thought that the trailer? Same thing. Mm-hmm. It's
totally.
It's like the possession of this slasher ghost. Yes, you're so right.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mark, you you said more like a series, right?
Yeah, I understand that I know how much money was paid for the franchise, so I know that it's not going to be dormant. I mean, they're not going to just let this sit there because it costs too much money. So, and there's too much money that could be made from it. I actually think that it should be like a long-term series, sort of like American Horror Story or American Crime ABC, and that each piece should be like a six-story arc.
Like anthology. Okay.
Yeah, and then do like focus in on Jesse. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally always focus in on either the parents or the children. Mm-hmm. And I would take it very, very dark. Actually, and I would bring it back to, you know, the underlying, like, you know, I always love when, and this is what I would do. I always love it when people, there's a really great moment I had where it was gay pride and somebody made Freddie in a rainbow sweater. And and this straight dude just like went off. Like, why do you gay people have to take everything? Robert's not gay and Freddie's not gay and on and on and on and on. And so I wrote him back and I was like, you know, first of all, that he's not real. But second, you know, he's a child molester and a serial killer. So we don't really want him on our team. You can have him if you want him, you know? And I would go back to that, you know what I mean? And not in a gratuitous way, but I would bring it back to the basics of what it is. And really, Freddie is the star, but he's not the star. I mean, in Elm Street 2, he's only like in 12 minutes.
Yeah.
Of the film. And I think that presence is what makes it really scary because he's ominous everywhere. And I make it really dark and they should come to me. I wrote a thing called Jesse's Lost Journal. They can use that as a template.
I love that.
Yeah, my journal is really, really fun.
That's how I found Mark. I read this, and I was so thrilled that I had to reach out to him because he not only is he really creative with this story, but it really lets you in. It kind of hints at stuff that you could tell it was inspired by experiences he'd had.
Oh, yeah, Jesse and I are basically the same person, you know. I mean, Jesse was the first time that, you know, it was kind of like so weird and so hurtful about this thing was for me was, you know, I had worked with really great film directors and a director's job is to protect you. You know, I mean, that's the covenant that you sign
right
when you work with a director. And and I was used to people protecting me. And Jack didn't have the wherewithal to protect me. And I see that now that he wasn't, you know, he wasn't emotionally aware enough or he was in over his head or something. And I really let people see me in Nightmare on Elm Street. And then when you're greeted with what I was greeted with, it was obviously you're the fag, so leave. You know, because we don't need you. We don't need your type in here.
That's all fantastic. All right, final question for you guys. So this podcast is about telling people what is worth watching. And besides Scream Queen, of course, what's on each of your list of recommendations right now?
Yeah, what are you guys watching? Anything you're
loving? One thing that you would recommend.
I can't stop talking about Dr. Sleep.
Oh,
yes. Reach.
If anyone's going to remake Nightmare on Elm Street, I hope it's Mike Flanagan.
Yes, that's what we said.
His dream sequence, his astral projection scene in Dr. Sleep was fantastic.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He gets my vote.
Love that.
Wow.
Did you see The Haunting of Hill House, Tyler?
Absolutely. And it destroyed me personally and brought me back up. It brought me into darkness and back out into the light. And I am a fan forever now.
Yeah.
I I think I would have to say, okay, so there's a lot of stuff I'm watching and liking, but if you want to watch something that bookends really nicely with Scream Queen, I would say the documentary You Don't Know Me, which is a very similar tale about showgirls, the movie Showgirls. And so when Mark talks about how a director doesn't protect the actor, this is the next chapter.
Wow.
And the two of these go really well together because you get to see a very similar situation how through the eyes of a female and through the eyes of a male.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a very similar society. I mean, obviously there's like a decade apart or so, but yeah, I would do You Don't Know Me. Our friend made that film. It is fucking great to watch.
Nice. Oh, that's exciting. Cool.
Yeah,
cool.
I think we should tour together.
We
would make a good double bill, and then we could come out, the two of us, and let people know what it's like to work for some of the worst people.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
But oh, for God, me, yeah, like I go from a totally different direction. I always bring up this one movie, which I would like people to see. It's called Closet Monster, and it won TIFF like a couple of years ago. Best Canadian film, and it stars Connor Jessup. And it's a coming out story, but sort of horrorish, and it is also beholden to Nightmare on Elm Street. There's something in the boy's stomach, and he's trying to get it out, and it's you know, it's all that internal homophobia. Mm-hmm. And I love that movie. It's really beautiful. But the movie I'm pushing right now is Jose. It's a movie from Guatemala, and it's you know, I live in Mexico, and it's been really interesting for me to watch. You know, we're like so socialized in the United States in a way that like gay people move to New York or whatever they do. And they're like gay, like we're almost like a subset of something. Mm. But in Mexico, it's like, you know, like the garbage man is gay and the box boy is gay. And the, you know, the lawyer, because some of them can't move out of their social stratosphere because of poverty or lack of education or whatever. And it's really kind of wonderful to watch people behave in the natural. You know what I mean? It's like the love is just as fierce with a box boy who is in the closet or somebody handing out flyers on the street, and they have to meet in motels and all this kind of stuff. And it's a beautiful, I just saw it. It's a really beautiful movie, and I highly suggest it. And it's from Guatemala. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very rough socially there. And they, you know, of course, the Trump administration wouldn't let the poor actor who's the star of it getting all these accolades back into the United States.
Wow.
Because they thought he was a flight risk, even though he went to school at the University of Missouri. They just, like, they're so xenophobic and racist. Mm. But anyway, so I'm all up with Jose. And now, but I want to see Tyler's movies. I'm all jazzed up now. I'm like gonna, I'm watching his suggestions later today.
Dr. Sleep
is so much better than it ever needed to be.
I've only read the book. I haven't seen the movie. Yeah. I'm excited, though. Looks good.
Yeah, I'm still baffled at the box office.
People weren't ready for it. And I'm just like, it's not all in the Overlook Hotel. It's a completely different story.
Yeah.
Rebecca Ferguson is, you know, she's got great, cool babysitter energy.
Yeah, she's fantastic. I wasn't sure how
so she, captivating.
Would,
yeah.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah.
So you guys haven't seen Scream Queen yet.
No,
we have not. No, but tell us how we can watch it now that it's out.
Perfect timing for that, Tom. There you go, guys.
Yeah,
it'll be on Apple TV, Google Play, Amazon Prime, and
that's how I'm going to watch
on digital. The DVD comes out on March 3rd, and we'll be still traveling the country.
And we're in theaters right now in Los Angeles, and soon we'll be in a theater in New York, I'm assuming. And
I hope.
And I'm on the road a lot, and I'm hoping the boys get to join me. But we're going to Berlin, just everywhere. And like, but first, I'm like,
oh yeah, and Berlin, to Detroit.
Australia? Yeah, Germany sounds really nice, but first I go to like Fargo, Detroit. You know, Philadelphia.
Oh, Pittsburgh. There you go. Philly. Okay.
They're all good.
And Baltimore.
Nice.
Well, thank you so much, guys. I know that you're super busy promoting this film, and I know the reviews are scary good. And lots of luck to you. This is a great story. People need to see this. People need to hear it. So anything we can do to help you promote, let us know. And thanks for the time.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you so
great
much.
Great talking to you guys.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Well, that's our episode, everybody. Thank you so much, as always, for checking us out. We are on Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, but more importantly, you can listen to all the episodes on addthistoyourlist.com. So there's no excuses. Just go there and download everything you need. Thank you to Greg, Ali, and Jay for your support to the podcast. We couldn't do this without you. Listeners, please engage with us on social. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
LinkedIn. And we're not that professional.
Not yet. Pretty soon. and please do leave us reviews on iTunes. We'll shout you out. And we will see you in about a week.
Yeah. Absolutely. See you guys.
Bye,
with
y'all.
Another special segment. Toodles. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
We'll be right back.